Many of Environment and Natural Resources will come to order. Make a note that we do have a quorum, right? Looks like it's 8 leads. Senator Ingebretson is up with Senate File 79. You want to go ahead, Senator?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 79 is a resolution that we've been working on for some time, and getting right to the point. It's the resolution to request, and I think you have copies of them in your file here, to delist the gray wolf. This resolution, of course, would go to the our federal counterparts in Washington, D.C. Also attached, you'll see a letter from Senator Amy Klobuchar with regards to her ideas, and I think also Senator Franken might even be mentioned in there. I'm not sure exactly if he is or not, but the gist of it is, Mr. Chair and members, that the way I understand it, and representatives from the DNR are here as well to answer any technical questions or give you an idea what the population really does look like, but in short, they were delisted some years ago because of the population, and now we have a population situation where the delisting actually worked, but it's probably worked a little too well. We're having some problems with could potentially have some problems with an overabundance. So that, I think, before I get in too deep, that I get myself into trouble here, I'll turn it over to Mr. Don Carlos, and he can comment further. But before that, I do have a technical amendment, Mr. Chair. The resolution, and maybe we should deal with that first. It'd be on line 1.18 of the resolution, and that would be after the word "remove," cross out everything until after the word "wolves," insert "in Minnesota." In other words, it's just regards to Minnesota.
So, do you want to repeat that so we know exactly what it is again?
Mr. Chair, as I understand what Senator Ingebretson is moving, he is on 1.18, delete everything after "remove," and on line 1.19, after "wolves," insert "in Minnesota." So it would read, "enact legislation to remove gray wolves in Minnesota from the federal list of threatened and endangered species."
Okay.
That's correct.
Okay. Any discussion on that amendment? Hearing none. All in favor of this friendly amendment, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. The amendment passes.
Thank you. And with that, I'll turn it over to the DNR officials who are here for their comments. And if you have any questions of them, certainly feel free.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Mike Don Carlos. Excuse me. I'm the acting deputy director in Fish and Wildlife. And Senator Saxhog may recall seeing a bit of me about 10 or 12 years ago on this same issue. DNR is supportive of this resolution. In fact, we have a pending petition filed with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to essentially do the same thing. In the last 10 years, wolves were actually delisted for about 18 months in Minnesota. Court action then negated that. And the process, frankly, has been so confusing that in my retirement, I haven't even been able to keep track of it. Dan Stark is our wolf expert, and he can speak to specific questions about process if you have them. But the Fish and Wildlife Service is acting, and they say right now they expect a final rule by the end of this year. And as I have observed to people, we've been expecting a final rule by the end of this year for the past 12 years, which is why DNR did a petition, and other entities are interested in pushing the service to get this done. So we're fine with this resolution, and we'd stand for any questions you might have.
Any questions? Yes, Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I do have a question. I'm reading this news release from Senator Amy Klobuchar, and most or second paragraph, it talks about the wolf management plan that has been proposed by the DNR would allow hunting and trapping of wolves for at least 5 years. But my question is, could you describe how we go about a wolf management plan, how long it takes? I'm just curious of the process for that part of it.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Gazelka, in beginning in 1996, but mostly in 1998, the DNR started a very extensive process to develop a wolf management plan. It included 12 meetings throughout the state of Minnesota. We convened a wolf management roundtable, and where we got all of the identified interested parties that we could find to work through a process to try to work out, you know, and resolve the issue. We had some success, but it was short-lived. We had a bill in 1999 that ultimately failed, and then a bill in 2000 that ultimately succeeded in the legislature. That bill sets some specific prescriptions for what a management plan would look like. For example, it precluded public hunting and trapping for the first 5 years of state management, as you alluded to in this letter, and other things. And it required us to then complete a wolf management plan, which we did in 2001. It's available on our website and otherwise. And that management plan was the plan that we worked from, was it in 2007? There was about an 18-month period where Minnesota was technically managing wolves, and we managed under the authority of that plan. And our opinion is that plan is still valid after all these years, and that would be our basis for state management if and when federal delisting occurs.
A follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Senator Gazelka.
Is there any reason you would be opposed to moving that up from 5 years to, say, next year or something like that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Gazelka, certainly when that language was included, there was no anticipation that we'd be having this discussion 11 years later. So, you know, the question or the point is a good one. That provision did come out of the roundtable process, and there was agreement way back when amongst the diverse viewpoints on wolves to that provision. Part of the rationale behind it is under the Federal Endangered Species Act, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has emergency relisting authorities during a five-year post-delisting monitoring period. So, in essence, they can, you know, fairly quickly reverse a delisting decision. After that five-year period, then the species could only be relisted in a start-from-scratch, if you will, procedure. And Minnesota is still divided, I think, pretty seriously about public taking and wolves, regardless of the biology, and I should tell you, DNR remains convinced that we could very responsibly manage public taking in wolves, and we're ready to do it. But it's still a contentious issue, and the state would still need to go through some sort of a public process to resolve that. So I'm not prepared to give you a department position on that question right now today, but that's some background on it. Certainly the legislature could do it. Whether it would be wise or not, I'm not sure at this point in time.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. Don Carlos? Okay, are there more testimonies here? You introduce yourself.
Mr. Chair, my name is Dan Stark. I'm the wolf specialist for the DNR, and I'm just here to answer any technical questions that you might have on the biology of wolves in Minnesota, the population status, distribution, those kind of things, if there's an interest in that.
Any questions for Mr. Stark?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dahl.
Mr. Stark, could you tell me what is the population of the wolves now?
Mr. Chair and Senator Doms, the most recent estimate we have on the wolf population was done in winter 2007-2008, and the population was estimated at about 2,900 wolves. That estimate has a confidence interval from about 2,300 wolves to about 3,500 wolves.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, if I could ask a question as well, can you give us the rate that the wolf population would go up if they were not controlled either by hunting or trapping regulations? Can you give us a little idea as to how what the picture of 3,000 wolves will be like in 5 years or 10 years?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, we haven't really seen a change in the wolf population for about 10 years. Our last three estimates have all overlapped with the range of about 3,000 wolves, and there's really been little change in the distribution or the number of wolves in the last 10 years. So we think the population is pretty stable, and it's likely going to fluctuate somewhere around 3,000, depending on deer numbers and how that fluctuates from year to year.
Senator Saxhog.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Stark, I don't think it's going to turn out to be as dire a winter as we thought it was going to be for deer, but let's just say we'd had a huge deer kill this winter. How quickly does that affect the wolf population?
Mr. Chair and Senator Saxhog, I guess for comparison's sake, we had some pretty severe winters in the mid-90s, and the deer population was severely impacted by that. The wolf population at about that time or soon after seemed to peak in the late 90s and has since stabilized. So, you know, likely it's going to respond to those crashes. We're going to see increased mortality in wolves and more dispersal where young wolves leave their packs, you know, in search of other areas to establish pack territories. And so I think there's some kind of natural regulation there that helps adjust wolf numbers in response to the amount of prey available to them. So I think that's one example where the areas of the state that are likely going to have wolves are pretty much occupied, and I don't think we're going to see a huge change in where wolves occur or the numbers.
Thank you.
Any other questions for these two?
Dan certainly could.
Mr. Chair, I'd also like the question asked, can you give us an idea about the problems in Minnesota or in our area about domestic animals and what's happening with regards to the gray wolf and domestic animals, herds?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, it's kind of the same story for impacts on domestic animals. The rate of depredations or damage caused to livestock and pets increased with the wolf population. So as we saw wolf numbers in the 70s at low numbers start to increase, we also saw a trend of depredation increase as well. And that pretty much peaked in the late 90s and has since kind of stabilized. It fluctuates probably dependent on the amount of available natural prey, the number of deer out there. You know, as deer numbers dip a little bit, there might be a slight increase in depredations looking for other alternative prey. The last couple of years, we've seen a slight rise in those numbers, but it still hasn't really reached the level that it did in the late 90s following those severe winters.
Okay. Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just another question. Over this period of time, have you seen the wolves any more aggressive towards livestock or pets? I guess I hear stories secondhand up in the Brainerd area of the wolves maybe not seemingly as afraid as maybe they were a decade ago. And I'm just wondering if you see any scientific data for that.
Mr. Chair and Senator Gazelka, There have been a couple of in the last couple of years, there's been some increases in depredations on domestic pets, like dogs, for instance. I don't know if that's really a trend that is going to continue to increase, or that's something that will likely stabilize as well. But I think it's mainly anecdotal information, and maybe it's more people reporting those kind of incidents, but we don't really have a good record to track, the number of encounters with pets and people through time. But more recently, there has been more damage to dogs that's been documented.
Senator Ingebrigtsen, do you have any other testifiers?
I have nothing further.
Okay. Are there others here that would like to testify? If you'd introduce yourself.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Bruce Glavin. I represent the Minnesota State Cattlemen's Association. Those are the folks that raise the beef cattle. They're fully in support of the resolution. Also on the agenda, you'll see Chris Raddatz from the Farm Bureau. He's not here today, and so I told him I would let the committee know the Minnesota Farm Bureau also supports the resolution. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Sir, Gary, if you introduce yourself.
Yep. Mr. Chairman and Senators, Gary Werdersen, the Vice President of the Minnesota Farmers Union.
Go ahead. Give your testimony if you okay. would. Welcome.
I can do that. Minnesota Farmers Union, we strongly support this resolution urging Congress to delist the gray wolf from the Endangered Species Act. We feel it's important too. We have members of our Congress, both senators and a few of our congressmen are working, have sent letters to try and get the gray wolf delisted. So we feel it's important for our state to back them up and help get this problem resolved. Our members in northern Minnesota, we feel that there's a very healthy wolf population and have reported numerous attacks on their livestock. You know, as members, we want the ability to defend their animals from these wolf attacks. And currently, the farmers work with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the DNR to track and kill the nuisance wolves. And in general, they do a good job, but we worry about the funding cuts of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife and the depredation account here at the state. You know, in general, you got Bruce is representing the cattlemen, but you can have a cattle or breeding cow or breeding livestock out there that could easily be worth over a couple $1,000s. And it's pretty hard for a farmer to stand by and see that wolf or that animal, you know, get killed and not be able to do anything about it, not be able to defend that. We worry about the funding cuts and how, you know, and the big thing about if you can get these delisted and go to a state plan, then it brings it back into a local control where the state manages it, and your response time would be a lot quicker, and it just would be a more workable plan, and protect it's not only the farmers but the pet owners and everything up there, and state that feels we have a healthy population now. So I guess with that, I'd stand for questions. I'd like to also thank Senator Ingersman for introducing resolution. It's kind of a long-standing problem up there, and it's as a farmer, it's tough to deal with the bureaucracy of agencies, and we have a problem that doesn't get addressed.
Good. Thank you. Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Clavin, when a wolf likely took a calf and you can't find the calf, are you reimbursed for that, or how does that process work?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Gazelka, we actually dealt with this last year on doing an investigation. It used to be limited to conservation officers from the DNR would come out and investigate basically a crime scene. We amended that last year to include sheriffs. And the reason we did that is the sheriff is on call 24 hours a day, whereas the CO is not always. And they can treat it like a crime scene. There's also involvement by the federal government as well. So if there's enough evidence to prove the claim, they still would be, even if they don't find the actual remains of the calf.
Members, any other questions? Okay, gentlemen, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Members.
Appreciate it. Senator Ingebrigtsen, do you have any last statements?
Is there anybody else that would like to testify? I don't think so.
Is there anybody else in the chairs? Nope.
That I move Senate File 79 to pass and go directly to the Senate.
To the rules?
Excuse me, to rules?
Yep. That's right. As amended, correct?
That's correct, as amended.
Okay. Good. Mr. Ingebrigtsen, Senator Ingebrigtsen, moves Senate File 79 as amended. Two rules. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The ayes have it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The record would show that the sheriffs do work 24 hours. That's been talked about last year and was mentioned again today.
Was that out of order?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah. Sheriffs are 24 hours.
Okay.
They're all
also insufferable.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I heard that. I resemble that. Next members, we have Senate File 756, Senator Dames. Subsurface Sewage Treatment System Ordinance Adoption Delay Extension, it's called. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I would like to introduce Senate File 756. Senate File 756 is a bill for an act relating to the environment, extending the Subsurface Sewage Treatment System Ordinance. It actually extends the date from February 4th, 2012 to February 4th of 2016. Mr. Chair, at this time, I understand that Senator Pappas has a friendly amendment that she would like to present.
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, I have the A11-0288 amendment, and I don't know if you clerk has copies of that. If not, I do.
I'm sorry. Do we have those passed out?
No, that's an abbreviation.
Okay, so it's a
Mr. Chairman, it wasn't done by our office. That sounds like a reviser number on it, so it was done in the reviser's office.
We get some copies? Is that there's
so
a pretty self?
I have copies here if you want to pass them out.
All right. We'll get those passed out. And I'm sorry, Senator Pappas, the A, I'm curious, what number was the amendment?
A11-0288. Yes. Mr. Chairman, if it's okay with the chairman,
sure, certainly.
And Senator, we have I have Victoria Reinhardt here from Ramsey County. This is at the request of Ramsey County.
To the amendment?
Yes, to the amendment.
Okay. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Victoria Reinhardt. I'm chair of the Ramsey County Board of Commissioners, and this item was just before us on Tuesday, so we have an official position from Ramsey County. This is asking for an exemption for the ordinance requirement for the SSTS, and the reason behind this is under previous rules, any county that had all of the jurisdictions that had ordinances or had no need for them because they didn't have septic systems or they did not allow for the installation of such were exempted from this because all of the local ordinances must be in compliance with the state rules. In the most recent iteration of those rules, that exemption was not included. And so this is trying to go back to allowing for the local municipalities, and again, all of the municipalities and the township in Ramsey County have such ordinances if they are needed. One of the reasons for this is, quite frankly, because in 1974, the issue of land use was eliminated from jurisdiction by Ramsey County, and I think Hennepin County, and there may have been others, but I know for Ramsey County, we don't even have that authority. And so to have this as kind of an extra layer really is unnecessary because we are complying with it within our cities. And so we would ask that this same exemption that was applied before would be applied again. This, as you can see, the language is not specific to Ramsey County, but at this point, I believe we are the only county in the state that it would fall under this, and that is unless all towns and cities in the county have adopted such ordinances. And again, those ordinances must be in compliance with state law.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions from the committee members about the testimony on the A11-0288 amendment? Senator Dames, do you accept this amendment?
Yes, it's a friendly amendment, and it is accepted.
Any other discussion?
Mr. Chairman, we try not to use the word such. In fact, the revisor may actually
Where's Danny Fredrickson when you need him?
There he is.
And I didn't know on 1.6 you have the word such, so you could say, in fact, you could keep this in the singular. If you delete such and insert and delete ordinances and insert ordinance. So unless all towns and cities in the counties have adopted an ordinance, I think it would read better.
I'll incorporate that, Mr. Chairman, into my amendment.
Thank you. Any other questions to the A11-0288 amendment? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Carried.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I have two folks that would like to testify on behalf of Senate File Number 756. The first individual is Anna Lee Garlitz. Anna Lee is from the Association of Minnesota Counties, and then Eric Bitenwerf, and Eric is the Hubbard County Environmental Services Director. So I'll turn it over to Anna Lee.
Ms. Gartlis, welcome to the committee. Please state your name. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Anna Lee Garlitz, and I'm with the Association of Minnesota Counties. This bill extension stems from ongoing concerns that AMC has heard from counties around the state. What it does, in addition to giving us time and a bit of mandate relief from adopting a new set of rules at a time where there's fewer people in county offices, there's fewer dollars to do so, but it also will give us more time to work with PCA to try to resolve some of these issues that have been raised about the new rule. I've invited Mr. Bitenwerf here today to kind of outline, kind of highlight some of those issues in a more technical manner that we're seeing in part of the rule and what some of the costs as a result of these new rules that counties may incur. We just had a meeting with the Pollution Control Agency regarding this bill and regarding ongoing discussions that started actually after the last legislative session. We had some very productive discussions going forward about what we might be able to do to address some concerns, how we can better interpret the rule and get clarification out to counties, and we really hope that we can continue to do that. This extension will be very helpful to allow us to pursue these discussions and hopefully identify some changes and some flexibility that's much needed for counties right now in order to adopt these ordinances. And I can answer questions or maybe...
Any questions of the witness?
Thank you
very much. Mr. Bitenwerf, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Eric Bitenwerf. I'm the Hubbard County Environmental Services Director. And some of the issues that the county, our county and other counties are facing would be similar to what the state is facing in that we face the same budget situation that you do. We receive approximately $10,000 a year for administration of the septic program in our county from the state, and that program cost is roughly $100,000 for us in terms of staff and resources needed to administer that program. So our principal concern is that the additional new rules will cause us to have to take on further administration of new roles and responsibilities without funding to accompany those responsibilities. Our other concerns would have to do with we run a very effective program in our county, as do many other counties, and we feel that the rule that existed prior to this new rule did a very effective job of protecting the environment and the resource. And our concern is that the new rules have gone beyond minimum standards, which was the charge-in statute for them in rulemaking. And the best way to liken it would be to a sledgehammer being used to kill a fly. One of our larger concerns is with that of the addition of new language, putting further administrative responsibilities on counties having to do with larger scale septic systems, those over 2,500 gallons per day. These systems would predominantly affect a large component of our local economy, that being our tourist industry, in that resorts and restaurants would likely fall under these new performance standards, which involve a much more intensive design process and also have greater costs in that design process, the installation of the system, and then it also requires continued maintenance and operation monitoring of that system, resulting in additional cost. Our concern is that there are 87 counties that would have to staff for these systems, and last few years we have only had maybe one system in our county that would fall under that criteria. So that's a large administrative burden that we're to incur, as are all counties to incur, to administer systems that we may see once every few years. Our other principal concern would be that of concern with a double standard, and with these rules being far-reaching in our county in particular, and there are other counties in our portion of the state that do not have countywide zoning, in non-shoreland areas where we do not require building permits, our concern is that a septic system is easy for a landowner to install without obtaining a permit, and it's very difficult for the county to ascertain whether a system was installed. Therefore, our concern is that we will be taking a step back with these rules because of their additional cost at a time when landowners are scraping every penny and dime they have to be able to stay in their home, let alone afford a new septic system. And our conservative estimates as to the cost of a new system under these new rules, as best we can approximate, would be in the neighborhood of $1,000 to $2,000 for an average system. That's a burden that most people aren't able to bear. I will be happy to entertain any questions that you may have. Those would be the broader points that I would like to bring to your attention.
Thank you. Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Bitenworth, can you describe sort of the problems and the extra burdens on the townships as well? As I understand it, Hubbard County townships have gotten together because of their concerns over this issue and what it might mean for them and in working with the county. Could you, is that correct to state that? I have a constituent that's been emailing me and calling me quite frequently about these issues. White Oak Township. So there's an additional burden somehow in the townships as well. Is that?
Mr. Bitenworth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Carlson, I've been in contact with that White Oak Township Supervisor, Mr. Dvorak. I don't know that they have specific questions in terms of township administration of the rules. Their township and most of the townships in our county don't administer septic programs. I think that would probably be more a concern of theirs for their citizens and the cost to their citizens for them to put in systems per these new rules.
Thank you.
Any questions from the members? Thank you very much. Senator, you don't have any more testifiers?
Mr. Chair, I don't have any more testifiers. I do believe there's two folks from MPCA that would like to testify.
Ms. Schabel and Kudelka, come forward. I'm sorry, Sable. Goodell, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. I do have a handout, folks, too.
Please identify yourself as well.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Thank you.
My name is Kirk Kudelka. I'm the legislative director for the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, and I have along with me Gretchen Sable, who works in our SSTS program.
Welcome. We hand those out. Who would like to begin?
Mr. Chair and committee members, I'd like to start and just give a brief background of the changes. In 2008, the rules were changed as a result of environmental concerns and the need to protect our waters. And I think that's a goal that the counties and the homeowners and the PCA and everyone agrees with. Some of the concerns were groundwater protections for those larger systems, nitrate and phosphorus concerns, along with better distribution of the effluent and drain fields to also protect groundwater, along with a stronger emphasis on making sure these systems do last while they're in the ground and once they're in there and don't deteriorate when folks can't see it and create that problem, the seepage and whatnot. You know, there's the larger improvements to the rules do come around the larger systems, and that the reason is we do have that concern with the larger systems, some of them that the PCA currently does. We have documentation of the problems they are causing to our waters because of the complex nature. Under the old rules, these larger systems, they're required for large resorts or a cluster of homes of eight or more to have a treatment system. However, the rules don't have any standards put in place. So the big change in the 2008 rules is to create a set of standards for those systems to ensure that our waters are protected. Our concerns with the delayed implementation of the ordinances, it's going to delay these protections for larger systems, And where they are really a problem, and the problem magnifies, is when they're in delicate shoreline or sensitive groundwater areas. So the problem is much larger than just one system because it have the direct access to the to the water. Currently, there are 34 counties who have already adopted the updated ordinances. A number of counties have agreed with the position, and one of those counties is the most recent is Sherburne County, and the staff there in a newspaper article did comment to the their county board that the changes did allow for increased flexibility and for protection. Legislation was brought forward last year to allow for some additional time. 2010, there were some rules that were made. The PCA had some technical changes that it needed to make, and at that time, we listened to the county and also made a number of consumer protection concerns that folks had and administrative problems, including making some stuff optional, like effluent screening. We also no longer require operating permits for holding tanks and made other changes, simplifying some tables and data, extending deadlines on tank registrations, and clarifying some stuff for the local government units. So the PCA has been working with the counties, and they've been a great help in making those changes. In addition, a task force was established to improve the implementation piece of these rules and ensuring our as partners with the counties to ensure the protection of the water. Our concern, again, is that when with the bill with a straight extension out for 4 years from the date in law, puts it out for 5 years for the adoption, and our concern is that these delays in implementation have keep being proposed. PCA has met with AMC. We met about a couple hours ago on the subject, and we did put forward a possible solution or compromise to the issue, and that is mentioned on the handout I gave you, is starting on the bottom. PCA is interested in accepting a shorter extension of deadline until 2013 for the smaller systems that we've heard about, and those are about 97% of the systems, but still looking for a framework to include other conditions that would hit our very large concerns, one being the larger systems that have a very enhanced effect on our waters when they do fail, and then two, straight pipes and other imminent health systems. What would need for a county to move forward with the extension is they would have to apply for the extension and provide a number of issues that they would like to work on in the meantime. And the PCA would have a list then to work with the counties to find a solution to their concerns. It's modeled off an example used in Coochiching County. Coochiching County was one of the last to adopt the previous SSTS ordinance. Using a system where we worked with them like this, not only they were able to adopt the former rules, they've also now adopted the 2008 rules. So it's a successful model that we think will help us with the current situation. Another item would be for the counties to adopt the rule changes for those larger systems that were mentioned that are 2,500 gallons per day by the current deadline, again, because of our concerns on their impact on the waters. And then also counties moving forward to complete an inventory and audit on straight pipe discharges, about 10% each year, so that in a 10-year cycle we can get rid of these problem systems that are putting sewage straight into our waters, whether it's surface waters or our groundwater. I think it's a goal that the counties and Pollution Control Agency share. And then also for funding mechanisms, the governor's budget does increase the funding for the county-based implementation grants a large amount. There was a 2004 report that suggested a dollar amount, which would be a increase in the funding for the SSTS program to the counties, and the governor includes that in his clean water recommendations. Both the House and Senate have also increased in their clean water funding bill additional dollars for those base grants. It's a doubling. It's not what was requested in the 2004 report that was identified as the need by counties and the MPCA. The clean water fund bill would also help provide dollars for the counties to implement inventories of those straight pipes on that 10% cycle so that in 10 years we can get a handle on the situation. Those dollars, the governor's budget also proposes a number of dollars that could be used to upgrade imminent health threat systems, and these dollars would go to homeowners that do have these systems that are identified as failing to help them fund the need. I think at this point that's what I...
Mr. Kudelka, if I could ask a couple of questions. You said directly, the discharge directly into our waters. How many complaints do you get a year on homeowners or business, for that matter, directly pumping sewage into the waters of our state?
Mr. Chair and committee members, recently the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency put together a report on the straight pipes and mechanisms to identify them. In the report and the counties annually report to us the number of straight pipes in their jurisdiction, and the number is slightly less than 40,000 of these systems exist right now that are straight pipes putting various effluents in directly into our waters.
Could you explain those? So what effluents you're talking about here? Is it directly sewer? Is it runoff water? Is it stormwater?
Mr. Chair, I'm Gretchen Sable. I'm with the Septic System Program at the Pollution Control Agency. The problem is direct discharge of sewage from the home to the surface water body. We call those straight pipes. They're actually identified in Statute 115-55, Subdivision 11, is the provision that allows us to enforce on those directly. And so your question had been to complaints. We have right now about 150 active cases, I believe, where we're working directly to enforce on the homeowners in those cases. And what we do is the county sends us a complaint and we work with the homeowner to address it. So,
Mr. Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How do you come up with 40,000? I just want to know where you came up with the number and how you got there.
Mr. Chair and Senator Gazelka, it is data that is reported to us by the counties. We ask counties to report yearly, and they have to estimate the number of straight pipes, and we conduct, we add up the math, and that's the number. It has been decreasing over the past few years.
Senator Dames, to that point.
Mr. Chair, and I apologize, ma'am, I don't have your name right in front of me, but when you're talking about a straight pipe, are you talking about a straight pipe strictly right out of the home, or are you talking about a straight pipe coming from the tank and then out instead of that drain field? Are you calling the drain field a straight pipe? Is that what I'm hearing?
Ms.
Or
Sable?
Are you saying there's no sewage collection system whatsoever? It's coming straight out of the house.
Ms. Sable.
Mr. Chair and Senator Doms, what happens is in some cases there is a direct discharge, in other cases there's a tank and then a direct discharge. There's no drain field involved. We call these subsurface sewage treatment systems because they discharge sewage below ground and the soil actually treats it. And when there's no soil involved, then that's when it's a problem.
Senator Follow up, Mr. Chair. How many systems do you believe that do not have a tank, that are direct without a tank?
Ms. Sable.
Mr. Chair, Senator Don, I don't know. We don't ask them to identify whether they have tanks or not. We ask them to identify whether they have drain fields or not.
Thank you.
Maybe to that point, Ms. Sable, then, so when you ask if they have drain fields, have you found any of them to be straight pipe, the ones that you've inquired as? They're actually coming right?
Yes.
They're flushing right into the system.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. That is that was a common practice, especially in areas with a lot of tiling, because when there was drain tile handy, that was a place to put sewage. It went away quickly and efficiently and without a lot of cost.
Any further questions? Senator Pearson.
Mr. Chair, I was just going to point out, I think the previous testifiers were looking to comment. Is that correct?
Yeah. I'm sorry.
I just noticed, I think the previous testifiers were looking to comment again.
Bidenworth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I wanted to just speak to the imminent public health threat numbers that were discussed here recently. Those numbers are arrived from annual reports that the counties provide to the agency. Those annual report numbers are very much guesstimates by each county. We have no idea what we have for imminent public health threat numbers. The agency asked for those to be provided as estimates, which the counties have done in the past. And those numbers have been totaled and presented to the legislature, indicating actual numbers. And I feel as though I think it's important for you to know that those are very much wild guesses. They should not be used as hard and fast numbers. And a lot of counties have concern that they are being used that way. And I want to make it clear to you that they are very much a guesstimate and should be taken into consideration as such. It's to the point where many counties are either misreporting or choosing not to report their numbers because we are having this issue with those numbers being used incorrectly in terms of making statewide decisions concerning septic systems.
Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bitenworth, do you have a process in place now in Hubbard County, or do all 87 counties have a process in place whereby you would identify a straight pipe situation, and regardless of the proposed laws, do you already deal with that? So if you, because of the imminent danger to health.
Mr. Bitenworth.
Mr. Chair and Senator Carlson, yes, our county does have a process in place, as does every county, for dealing with those systems once identified. In our county, we would send that landowner a letter informing them of the 10-month timeline they have in which to upgrade that system with a new compliance system. Our county also has a lakewide survey program that we use and has been completed that went through and systematically identified failing systems, imminent health threat systems, and required that those systems be brought into compliance. The bulk of our county's population is on our lakes, so I feel that we've done a very good job in addressing those systems. And every county will tell you that they have an equal concern with taking care of those systems because our lakes are our resource. They are what drives our economy. If we don't take care of our lakes, we don't have an economy. So therefore, it's in our interest to take care of those systems, which we do.
Mr. Bitenworth, I might ask a question about a 10-month period. Where did that number come from, and who determined that it would be 10 months that they would be allowed to react to a straight pipe situation? Is that the law?
Mr. Chair,
okay.
The answer to the question is the 10-month period comes directly from the septic rules. That is where the 10-month period is specified. The period for upgrading a failing system is 12 months. Why only a two-month difference in the two, I couldn't tell you.
I apologize for the question. I'm supposed to know all those laws. There's a law already on the book about 10 months. So, Mr. Kanoff is looking it up, actually. So, Senator Kalash.
One of the things I'm not sure I understand is that you're reporting numbers, but you're reporting wrong numbers. And I'm not sure the advantage of increasing those numbers to your county if you're, you know, if you're guessing high on these numbers on a regular basis and suspect that the other counties are doing the same thing. That seems a little strange to me. And then at the same time, you're saying that your county has cleaned up all the straight pipes around the lakes because you have a program for doing that. Now, your numbers for straight pipes should have been dropping as those systems were taken care of. But so I'm getting a little conflict from the way you've testified on this. Are there any more straight pipes in your county? Has that been corrected? Is the numbers that you're submitting higher than what is really the actual case? And some of it is just, you know, if we're using fictitious numbers to report, that seems a little bit of a problem as well.
Mr. Bitenworth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Kalash. I can speak for our county alone. I can't speak for others. The percentage of them, they ask that that figure be reported as a percentage, and then they also ask for total number of systems in the county, or I should say total number of residences. I can say from our own county experience until this last year, we weren't able to get those numbers in a certain form from our assessor's office. So up until this most recent year, I can tell you that all those numbers are suspect. I don't know what the reasonableness as far as a range of accuracy in those numbers would be. We don't report those numbers on the high end because of the issue of that in recent years with the legislature. So if anything, when we have reported in the past, we've tried to report as accurately as possible. This most recent year, I will admit that we did not report those figures because I didn't want them to be mistaken, misused for something that they weren't intended to be anything other than a swag.
Can I just follow up? So, Mr. Chair, Mr. Buttenworth, what are the numbers? How many of these straight pipe, penalties or requirements to fix up has your county done over the past, say, pick a number, 3 to 5 years? And shouldn't that be bringing your percentages down as to how many straight pipes per residence?
Mr. Chair and Senator Kielash, in the last 3 to 5 years, I can't think of more than a handful, if that, of straight pipe systems that we've dealt with in bringing up to compliance. It has more to do with what would be termed a failing system, which is a system that typically doesn't meet separation from the saturated layer in the soil. My experience with straight pipes was one that roughly fell under the straight pipe provision, and that was a resort owner who was pumping their system out of the tanks because their mound system had frozen. When I contacted the agency for assistance in enforcing on that system, I didn't receive much of a response other than they have 10 months in which to take care of that, despite the fact I reported sewage running down the township road and entering the ditch into the lake.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Buttenworth, typically when you, I was going to ask to follow up, when you find a straight pipe, I mean, typically how old is that home? Because, I mean, I'm confident that counties have rules and regulations in place now for new construction that prevent this from happening. So I'm kind of curious, how old typically are these homes where you find the straight pipes? Is there a time frame when a lot of these went in?
Mr. Bidenworth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Peterson. I can't say that there is a correlation with the age of a system and straight pipes that we would encounter. We see some systems that might be considered a straight pipe or a tank and then a pipe exiting the tank onto the ground. Sometimes that's an individual who pulls a temporary structure like a mobile home onto a property, and they do so outside of our shoreland area because we do not require building permits as a result of not having countywide zoning. In those cases, it's difficult, unless the person voluntarily complies, for us to know, and those would be the types of situations where we see people self-installing some form of a septic system that probably does not comply. And I think the principal reason people do that is because of the cost of compliance. And that would be, again, one of our concerns in our county, that we are making it so burdensome for people to comply, and the enforcement is so minimal that if you are caught, the penalty is not enough to act as an effective deterrent to get people to do things properly in the first place. So that's our primary concern.
Thank you.
Mr. Bidenworth, I've got a question. Counties, you understand the 10-month rule. You have the option as a county to actually shorten that to 5 months or 6 months to react. Do you know that, or have you heard of any counties that have done that? Maybe I should have Ms. Gartlitz come up and testify to that as far as representative from the county.
If I may, Mr.
Sure.
Chairman, I would have to defer that to our county attorney. I'm not an attorney myself, so I don't know for sure. I would suspect that if the state rule allows an individual 10 months in which to upgrade, it would be difficult for the county to give people less of a timeline than what the state allows.
Sable.
Mr. Chair, the state law specifies 10 months, as Eric said, but we have some counties that enforce under the public health nuisance laws, which allow a shorter time frame. And so we'll typically find those in some of our metro counties and also in tight shoreland areas. They'll look at that as a nuisance condition that they'll seek to abate within a month, I believe, or 10 weeks, some shorter period of time.
Okay.
And on the failing systems, the way the law is structured, it says that an imminent threat has to be corrected in 10 months, but then the local governments set the time frame for failing systems. And so some choose 12 months, a lot of them choose 2 years, and others choose longer time periods. So just wanted to clear that up.
Thank you for that.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dames.
I would just like to remind the members that we're asking for an extension here, but we're not asking to change any rules at this point. We're just asking for an extension. So the county is still responsible to look out for the imminent health dangers. They still have to continue to enforce the current ordinances that they have in place. So I think we just need to point that out, that we're still, certainly counties are being very vigilant about their imminent health issues with those type of systems.
Thank you. I think you had some questions that weren't quite clear, but I think they're clear now. Any other questions from the members? Hearing none, Senator Dames.
Mr. Chair, I would move that Senate File Number 6756 be passed and move forward.
As amended.
All members, any more questions? I'm sorry, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Where do we? Does it go right straight to the floor from here? Where's it go?
Yes, go straight to the floor. Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
No further questions. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Bill carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you. Yeah, I should make an announcement, Senator Jungbauer, the update on Senator Jungbauer's jogging incident. I guess it happened yesterday. He had been kept over in the hospital for another day for observation, just to pass that along to you. So anybody that would like to stop down, he is at Regents Hospital. And tomorrow, Senator Hall.
As of this morning, he really wasn't up for visitors. So you better call ahead of time.
Okay. Thank you. As of tomorrow, as you know, we're going to tour the North Ottawa out in the Wheaton area and the Red River area and stop and have lunch, I believe, in Wahpeton and go from there to have a meeting in Moorhead. So those folks that are welcome to come along, please contact Mike here.